comicbook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, January 24th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for the Wednesday edition of the show. Two guests joining me here today, the first, Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat Super Bowl 52 and a little bit of NBA stuff. Second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds, who you know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds and the number one. We'll also talk about Super Bowl 52, but then we'll take a look at the Farmers Insurance Open on the PGA Tour. Tiger Woods making his return here this week, so we'll chat a little bit about that. My apologies here. I'm going to sound a little bit different on today's show. Couldn't connect to Blog Talk Radio the way that I normally do, so just going with my cell phone here for the manner of hosting. So if I do sound not as polished as usual, or maybe there's a little bit of extra background noise, something like that, I do apologize for that. But make sure that you're going over to bangthebook.com, checking out all of the great content that we have available, some shiny new things over there today. I put up a Major League Baseball transaction analysis piece this morning. It's about 2,800 words of a lot of the moves that we've seen here so far, and still a lot of moves left to go with a lot of free agents out there kind of waiting on that before I do too much prep work for the Major League Baseball season. So you can check out that transaction analysis piece over at bangthebook.com. Doug Carson's daily NBA pick, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday NBA picks are up over there. Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks will be up this afternoon as well. So we've got that. We've got all kinds of Super Bowl content that we're going to be rolling out. Betting trends every day for college basketball, the NBA, and the NHL. Tons of stuff going on over there, including free contests, sportsbook reviews, that matchup data section, free pick videos with yesterday's guest, Brian Blessing. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information at bangthebook.com. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. Sign up using that promo code BTB and the number 25. You get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests joining me here on the program today. The first, Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great.
Well, lots of stuff to talk about here as we look at this week off for the NFL playoffs. We've got the Pro Bowl coming up on Sunday. I'm pretty sure you will have your all-time game of the year 100-star play on the Pro Bowl, much like everybody else out there in the industry. But you know, this week, it's so slow-moving. I mean, at least we've got the prop bets coming out a little bit earlier this year, it feels like, than in past years. But you know, still, just talking about a lot of the same angles, considering a lot of the same things.
That's funny you mentioned the Pro Bowl. I actually went to the Pro Bowl one time in Hawaii, and only half the people showed up. Nobody really cared. Now they moved it to Orlando, and I've got family down in Orlando. I asked them, I said, you going to the Pro Bowl? And they give me a look like, what's the matter with you? So, not only will I not be having a play on the Pro Bowl, I won't be paying any attention to it, and it's a shame, but what are you going to do? Nobody wants to tackle, and it's a totally different game than it is for the Major League Baseball and even in the NBA a little bit, in the, All-Star game.
All right, so Super Bowl 52 here. We're about 10 days away from the game, and, you know, we're just barely halfway through this bye week here. But, Brian, I've been crowdsourcing opinions on the game. I certainly want to get your thoughts here on the number that we're looking at in the marketplace. Still New England minus 5. There are a couple of 5.5s out there, Pinnacle and the Greek being two of the sharper offshores that are in the marketplace. They're still sitting at 5.5. Most of the rest of the market at 5 right now. What do you think about this number, first of all?
You know, I haven't done anything when it comes to the Super Bowl line. It's a dead number right now. So it started out, there was a couple sixes out there originally. But, you know, your key numbers right there are 6 and 4, and it's sitting right there in between. So I'm not looking to pounce on anything right now. I think the line, chances are it may go down a little bit more. If Gronk is ruled eligible to play, it may go up. His value is probably anywhere from a half a point to a full point. But the public will think it's worth a lot more than that because he's their big star. But if you take a look at the way the Patriots have played without him, they've done very well against the spread without him. They make their adjustments. When you've got the best coach in probably the history of the NFL, you're going to make adjustments with who you have out on the field and who you are playing the strengths and and strengths and weaknesses of the opposition. So I kind of like Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia can give them a game. I think when you take a look at how these teams break down as to a yardage standpoint and how they've done defensively on the season, that's the big differential, is the Philadelphia defense has been so much stronger than New England defense. But the Patriot defense is very good in the red zone, and they're one of those defenses that bend but don't break. So you have to take their numbers with a little bit of grain of salt, because they play it a little bit differently than a lot of other teams do. And you know, one thing I've taken a little bit of notice is both teams are very good in the red zone. So you may not see as much yardage as you would be, but both teams should be able to turn some of those field goals into touchdowns, which when you get into your props of longest field goal and that kind of thing, and who will score the first touchdown and all that kind of thing, it'll be more of a – I'm assuming there's going to be more touchdowns in this game than the field goals. Field goals are usually set at 3.5 with a juiced on the under. I would think that would probably be a pretty good number there. Obviously, you don't have to worry about the weather playing up in Minnesota. So at this point, I'm just trying to get a good idea on how to attack the game, and the props will be far more important to me than the game itself.
Well, and that's the hard part, I think, about this game, is that you've got this Philadelphia team. You only have 4 real data points for Nick Foles, and only 2 of them have been against playoff teams, and that's here, you know, obviously in the playoffs. You played the Giants and the Raiders during the regular season, and those are both very bad defenses. So you really don't want to take too much out of those games, and then certainly the last game against Dallas. You know, Philadelphia had nothing to play for. Foles started it, didn't play particularly well, gave way to Nate Sudfeld, and you know, that was kind of the end of that. So I think that you've got, I don't want to say necessarily a real high variance game here, but you don't know what you're going to get from Nick Foles. And then you look at the body of work for New England. They played Tennessee, who upset Kansas City. Tennessee, you know, not a great football team. It's really not a surprise that New England handled them. Last week, they really struggled with Jacksonville. And, you know, Tom Brady's been getting hit a little bit more here over the last few weeks. He had to use his legs a little bit more than he's comfortable with in that Jacksonville game. Yeah, you know, but Philadelphia is not as aggressive defensively as Jacksonville. So you kind of wonder what the plan is there for Philadelphia. Are they just going to sit back in coverage? Are they going to try and pressure Brady a little bit more? What does New England do with Nick Foles? You know, do they kind of wait back, let him make some mistakes? I think that this is probably, in terms of the Super Bowls that we've had over the last several years, the most challenging one for me to handicap, because I think it's hard not just from a line standpoint, from a prop standpoint as well, because you've got two teams loaded with skill players. Gronkowski and Ertz kind of stand out for both teams, but both of them have really good wide receivers and running backs. You've got Brady, who you know what you're going to get. Foles looked really good last week. You kind of wonder, you know, is this the Nick Foles going forward? Was last week an aberration? I guess it's a really, really hard Super Bowl to handicap on all accounts.
Yeah, it could be. I think Philadelphia will get more pressure on than you do. They've been able to get pretty good pressure on all season. They're a pretty good sack team. And we already know with Brady, when he struggles against, when he gets hit a lot and gets sacked, what's probably going to happen. And it's something that a lot of times you have to take a look at numbers, and I'm a numbers guy. And usually in the Super Bowl, everybody comes in and they play the underdog on the money line, which gives you a lot of value on playing the favorite in the money line. So you can always, if you don't have an opinion on the game, you can always take a look at the favorite on the money line at a cheap money line, or you could take the points with Philadelphia, because the one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to be playing the underdog on the money line, because you're never going to get your full worth out of that. So if you look at Philadelphia, take the points. If you're looking for New England, wait until the day of the game and get a nice number on the money line. And that's probably the way I'd look at it. At this point, I doubt if I'll even have a play for my clients. And to be totally honest with you, I've never done that well on my Super Bowl sides. So, you know, no need to force a play if I don't have enough information and enough confidence in it. So there's plenty of other ways to tackle this game.
No, there definitely are. And I like the point that you brought there, that you get a little bit of in the suit, because like you said, people want to play, you know, that underdog. So Philadelphia right now, you look at BetOnline, for example, +180. Pinnacle plus 95, which means that New England's in the minus 215, minus 220 range. Typically, when you've got a spread of 5.5, you see a money line higher than that. You know, sometimes you'll see it 240, 250 in that kind of range. So, you know, because of that, I think that you're definitely onto something there. You can look to possibly play Philadelphia plus the points, New England money line. Maybe you kind of middle in that situation. And I think that, you know, in looking at a game like this where you've got two very well-coached teams, I don't know if anyone's able to get a whole lot of separation here. And also, let's keep in mind, I mean, this number, if it closes 5.5 or higher, it's going to be the highest spread that we've seen in a Super Bowl since 2009. So, you know, we're already into a little bit of uncharted territory. If we get some of that investment on the New England side, whether it's heavy public money or some sharp money that comes back in on the Patriots, you know, we're going to be talking about a spread that's, you know, the highest that we've seen in recent Super Bowl history. And I just don't feel like, you know, New England or Philadelphia, for that matter, really equipped to run away and hide in this type of game. So, you know, I think that you could also sort of look at it that way in terms of limiting your risk, limiting your exposure a little bit. Philadelphia plus the points, New England money line, and then all those considerations of Brady against this defense, Foles against the Patriots defense, you kind of limit your exposure a little bit.
Yeah, you definitely do. And I believe New England, even with all the success they've had, I don't think they've ever won a Super Bowl by more than 6 points. So they haven't been one of those teams to blow out the opposition. And in fact, last year, obviously, down a ton and then make that big comeback. So the Patriots have had a lot of success in the Super Bowl, but when you break it down, they have not been a dominant team in the Super Bowl, and that always leaves that underdog in that game. And Philadelphia's got the opportunity. You know, you take a look at how they played all season long, regardless of who the quarterback is. Philadelphia is probably the best team in the NFC. We've got the Patriots, the best team in the AFC, and that's the way it's looked all season long. Now, granted, obviously, you don't have the same quarterback, but I think a lot of it now is the way Foles has been playing is maybe that drop-off at quarterback isn't as high. One of the guys out here in Las Vegas that rates every single player, Kenny White, I really respect Kenny, and as soon as the quarterback change was announced, he said, this is way too much. He said, it should be about a point differential, and you know, he didn't look good the first two games, as you pointed out, but since then, Foles has looked pretty good, and he's had a pretty good career as a backup, and so I think this is the real Foles. I think the way we've seen Philadelphia play in the playoffs is the real team, and once again, they're the underdog, so they're going to pounce on that once again, and that seems to be their calling card for the playoffs, so we'll have to see how it goes, but yeah, if I'm going to play it, I'll take Philadelphia with the points, or New England on the money line, just because it's a good bet at that number.
Well, and like I said, I mean, I think I said this leading into the divisional round game. You know, when Doug Peterson took over with the Eagles, he said, I want Carson Wentz. This is the guy I want. And they gave him carte blanche to go out and get him, but he still kept Nick Foles around as the backup. So he must have felt, you know, as somebody who has, you know, developed and closely worked with quarterbacks throughout his coaching career, he must have felt that Foles could be the guy to step in for this offense. Must have thought he was a good fit for this scheme. Now we get to see, you know, I mean, I think he's already been validated in that regard because of how Foles has played in the first two playoff games here. But, you know, obviously he could really be validated depending on what happens in Super Bowl 52. So I know you mentioned you're sort of organizing your thoughts in terms of the prop betting market. I want to hear from you on, you know, how you sort of do that. I mean, what are you doing in terms of compiling information to play these in terms of seeing where the different sports books open up with their lines? Walk us through, you know, what your process is for getting organized, because there are, what, 400 some odd props that get posted?
Yeah, they will. The Westgate is usually the one that puts up the big pamphlet of it. I believe Thursday night, tomorrow night, they'll be doing it. Just got off the texting with another guy to see who's going down, what time we're going down, that kind of thing. It's really the props is where every professional bettor that I know is the one time that they really get together going into the Super Bowl. They discuss a lot of information. They put more work in. There's been times in the past where I've put in, you know, 50 hours of work just on the props. And it's just frustrating because if the game, there's such a variance in the props too. If the game goes as you feel, you could have a lot of success. But I've learned over the years that basically, instead of, you know, a lot of people will play the props based on how they think the game is going to go. And for the most part, if you're going to do that, just stick with the game. I don't understand the logic in that a lot of times, because you'd have to know exactly how that game is going to be played out. The way I look at it is, when it comes to the props, it has nothing to do with how I think the game is going to play out. It has to do with how I think there's value. And you'll have certain, you make a prop and you go through all the the 16 games of the team and the playoff games, and you figure out how many times the kicker kicks the ball out of the end zone or whatever. And then you say, okay, well, how about the other team? How many times do they kick the ball out of the end zone? And then you check at the weather and all that. And then, it's going to be different this year because you're playing in a dome. But then you figure out, okay, this is the possibility of how many kicks are going to be in the end zone. And then you could bet that prop. And it's sort of like everything else. It's like Philadelphia. Philadelphia's only had four games this year where they've given up a touchdown to the tight end. They've given up five all the season. Two of them were in the same game, I believe, with Kelsey in Kansas City. So you're looking at 25% of the time they've given up a touchdown to the tight end. Well, at this point, we don't know if Gronk is going to play or not, but he's a big part of that New England offense. And when you're playing against New England, you're thinking that they are going to score a touchdown with that. So you have to compare their numbers compared to Philadelphia's numbers and come up with a real number and go from that. And basically, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to set yourself up with every possible prop that's out there. A lot of the ones I've had success with in the past has been cross-sport props. I remember one time when Kobe Bryant was playing, and he was in that streak where everybody was saying that he was shooting too much. So he started being an assist man. This was, I believe, his second last year, and he was getting great assist numbers, and they didn't take that into account for his scoring. So it was his scoring against something else in the football game. And his scoring had been down the last week before the game, and I knew that was going to continue. So I was able to take the opposition, whatever the other thing was, more over the Kobe Bryant points, and that was a nice, easy winner. So you've got to really handicap anything going on. A lot of times everybody will come in, and they'll have all their football work done, and then they'll talk about some team's goals or a certain player's points or whatever. So you got to walk around and say, well, this is a guy I know is really good in soccer, so let me ask him how many goals they may score in that game or whatever. And a lot of times you have to take everything home, and you've got homework. You've got to take all the sheets home and try to figure out those other things. But it's you against everybody else that's betting it. So the sooner you get it, the better number you're going to have. And it's a lot of work, but it actually pays off very well. And sometimes they make a mistake. And I know there's been times where people have copied the Westgate's numbers, and the Westgate will throw in one or two numbers that are off just to watch somebody else copy it at a different casino and get hit by it, because the other casino doesn't want to do any work. And, believe me, everybody down at the Westgate puts in a ton of work in this, and they do a terrific job.
Yeah, they really do. And credit to all of the odds makers out there that are putting these things out. I mean, they are very, very creative in a lot of ways that also, just do take a lot of work. And one thing here is we'll wrap up the NFL and get to the NBA for a few minutes. One thing that's really interesting, and I heard Cheetah and Matt Lindemann talking about this on VSiN on Friday when they were filling in for Gil Alexander, is that this time around, for the first time, the Vegas Golden Knights have a game on Super Bowl Sunday. Obviously, this is their inaugural season. So the cross-sport prop thing is something that's very, very big. It's something a lot of people like to do. They take on the Washington Capitals. So you've got Alex Ovechkin and some of the big names there with Washington. So that'll be a very popular offering on the board out there in Vegas, I'm sure, with some cross-sport props between the Super Bowl and the Golden Knights game.
Yeah, there definitely will be, with all the excitement for the Knights out here. One of the things I want to talk about before we get into the basketball is, if you're betting to make money, and I think most of us do, what you want to do is compare what the sharps are doing as opposed to what the general public are doing. So when you make your list and you've got all your props bet, one thing I want to take a look at is how many minuses against how many pluses in your portfolio. You don't want to play too many pluses because everybody likes to play the will there be an overtime at plus 700, 900? Will there be a safety at plus 700? Will this happen, a non-offensive touchdown? And they're all going to be the pluses. And, you know, the general sports bettor who doesn't do it for a living, it's sort of like playing the slot machines. You come out to Vegas and you want the big payoff. You want to hit the mega bucks. You want to hit the big payoffs in the slot machines. You don't want to play to pay a lot to win a little. And that's where the pros come in, is for years, you know, last year, I believe, was the first year that the overtime ever hit. But, you know, the chances of an overtime hitting is a lot higher than what you're going to have to pay. So there's been times right before the game that you could lay 700, 800 to 1, 8 to 1 on will there be no overtime, and the chances of an overtime hitting are a lot higher than that. So there's guys that are going to be coming in there. If you have that big bankroll, they're going to be laying the minus number. So what you want to do is, if you want to see before the games are off, if you've got a really good portfolio, you'll have a lot more minus numbers, a good numbers, than you will the plus numbers, because it's rare to get value on playing the underdogs, the plus numbers, that kind of thing. It's like going to the horse race. You might think you've got a horse at 50 to 1, when in reality, he should be 100 to 1. And so you are playing that because you're trying to get the big payoff, but the better chances are, or if you're betting the favorites in those races. And I'm not a big horse racing guy, but I do know how they make the lines, and they're trying to protect themselves. For example, futures in baseball. I remember back when the Braves and the Twins went to the World Series, huge numbers on getting those teams. Now you don't find those numbers anymore. In fact, I saw the other day the Browns were 300 to 1, and we all know the Browns are terrible. And it used to be that you could catch five or six baseball teams at 500 to 1. So just keep in mind that if you have a lot more minuses, you're going to have a better portfolio than you will if you have a lot of pluses in your card looking at the Super Bowl props.
No, I think that's an excellent point to end on there, because those are very enticing things. I mean, I know my favorite prop from the national championship game was that there wouldn't be a defensive or special teams touchdown. I don't remember what the juice was. I think it was minus 170, minus 175, something like that. But, you know, there wasn't one, and generally speaking, there's not going to be one. You know, more often than not, there's not going to be one. You know, will there be a safety? Highly unlikely that there will be a safety. But when you look at the juice that's on something like that, you know, it's generally 92% implied probability, something like that. Well, in reality, the chances of a safety are probably, you know, 2-2.5% at most. So, you know, there is value in laying those very heavily chalky numbers. But, you know, obviously, like you said, a lot of people just don't have the bankroll to go out there and play, you know, minus 800, a minus 1,000 on will there be a safety? No, because, you know, they don't want to do that. So they'd rather play one unit to win 7.5 units on the off chance that there's a safety. So I think that's a really good point to end on. It's something we can talk about a little bit more next week as we focus in a little bit more on the prop betting market and some of the specific props that our handicappers and our guests here on the show will be playing. All right, let's transition over to the NBA. And last time when we talked about the NBA, we focused on the Cleveland Cavaliers and talked about all the problems that they have. And I said, well, you know, I kind of like them against Orlando. This feels like a spot where they're going to step up because they gave up 127 points to them the previous game. Well, they were up by 20 at halftime, so I was feeling pretty good about myself. And then they win the game by 1 point. They give up 148 to Oklahoma City over the weekend. Yesterday, a debacle all around. You had the Kevin Love news late Monday night that they're having problems with that. Seems like Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder are, you know, decent fits from a playing standpoint, but not so much from a locker room standpoint. Last night's effort against the Spurs was just deplorable, especially on defense. This team is a disaster right now, Brian.
It definitely is, and if you remember, we were against each other in that Orlando game, and I've just seen the Cavs so many times, and everything that I said on the podcast is what has worked out, and, you know, J.R. Smith's been playing terribly. He doesn't have that same fire as he has in the past. Same with Thompson. I don't know what's going on with him. These are the guys that you had coming off the bench that were coming out there and they were giving the full efforts. Well, if you watch a play, nobody is giving any full efforts. Dwayne Wade's at this point the guy that I like when he comes out on the court. He still makes the right cuts. He still puts himself in a position to get the open passes. Not many of the other guys do. And it's just one of those things that, you know, when they went up against Oklahoma City, this the telling part was you could watch every time Oklahoma City went down there, no matter who got the ball, they always seemed to be on J.R. Smith or Isaiah Thomas, and they had a 4 or 5 inch advantage in height when they went up against them. And no matter who it was, they would find that spot to be able to exploit the Cleveland Cavaliers defense. And it happened every time down. And then when you see Cleveland coming down, Cleveland doesn't look like they look to exploit anybody in that regard. Kevin Love's one of those guys that can shoot from the outside. So you're pulling the bigger guys out. They don't seem to do enough of that. And then when he goes down underneath, he should be able to have his way. And they've gotten totally away from that. So I don't know what's going on over there, but there's no way I'm going to back them. And they haven't covered since we've done that last podcast. They haven't come close to covering. And it's going to continue. Is this team right now, just the effort is not there. And when you've got the veteran leadership, you know, as much as I like LeBron, he keeps talking about getting these guys in gear. Half of it is his fault. He's not getting back on defense. He's complaining too much. He's not giving the same effort. You could see it offensively. There's been times in the past when he just takes it himself and goes to the hoop and he can't be stopped. He's not doing that right now. So when your leaders aren't putting in the effort and they're blaming other people, it's not a good situation. And I'm going to continue to bet against the Cavaliers every game. And it's basically free money at this point.
I'm not somebody that's big on team chemistry. I mean, I think, honestly, the way that you fix team chemistry is you win games. And if you're winning games, you know, everyone's getting along. Things are hunky-dory. No one's pissed off at each other. And then you look at, you know, things in the NBA, and obviously, you know, the NBA has become I don't even know how to really describe it. I mean, you've got guys that are throwing shade on social media, Instagram in particular. You've got this soap opera now with the Cavs where – they don't like the front office. They don't think they maximize their return on the Kyrie deal. Isaiah Thomas doesn't play defense. You know, Kevin Love, they don't like him because he was sick and had a headache and whatever else. You know, so in the NBA, it feels like you get this more than in other sports. And again, I'm finding out a lot of things about the NBA and handicapping it this year in terms of paying more attention to, you know, recent performances and streakiness. And then this whole concept of how teams get along. I mean, there are some very, very bad basketball teams out there that just don't have talent, but they're out there giving an effort every single night. You've got other teams that are really talented, like Cleveland, not giving any effort whatsoever. You know, for Boston here, it seems like effort's been a little bit of a problem for them lately, as they've now dropped, you know, 4 in a row. And, you know, the NBA is just, it's so fickle, it feels like. And that's something I'm trying to come to terms with here because, you know, as I've talked about throughout the weeks here, on the show, I'm a sample size type of guy. I believe in the long term. NBA, it seems like it's just a very, very short term league. And when you look at a highly talented team like Cleveland just doing absolutely nothing in the NBA, and an expansion team of even as William Carlson called them for the Golden Knights, of these, you know, golden misfits, the way that they just play together and the effort that they're showing, it's a big reason why they're in the position that they're in. And the effort Cleveland's not showing is a big reason why they're in the position that they're in. So I think maybe these emotional angles and this streakiness of the NBA, you know, it's been kind of eye-opening for me this year, to say the least.
It definitely is. And one of the things I've looked at, and it's tough from a coaching standpoint because each player in the NBA makes so much money. They've been so good in college. They've been – their entire career, they've been terrific ball players. And now they get to the NBA – and they make their money. How many times do you see a guy sign a big contract and then all of a sudden he's not the same player? Maybe that has something to do with Thompson in this regard because he just signed that big contract in the offseason. And the coaches, for the most part, what can you do? Unless you're Pops or you're one of these coaches that have been around a long time that have the players' respect, it's tough to get the most out of your players. And, you know, when Lou came into the organization, they brought him in as basically a backup for Blatt. He was a player's coach, and the players liked him. They didn't like Blatt. Well, now they're playing with the player's coach, and I don't think Lou has the ability to get really on these players. And he said after last night's game that he's making some changes. That's it. But he's kind of lost the team, and the team is doing what the team wants to do. And because I don't think there's the respect there, because he hasn't had that success as an NBA coach. That part of that is the way the teams are playing. And a lot of times in the NBA, if you've got a stern coach that's respected, he wins every year, which is what San Antonio does. And look at Miami. After Miami has lost all these players over the years, and they continue to give a good effort every time out, even though their coach was originally, that was one of the coaches where nobody said they liked the coach. And now he has been able to prove himself that he's one of the better coaches in the NBA. So a lot of it comes down to coaching. And if you're a player's coach, sometimes the players want the player's coach, and they tend to walk all over you. And that seems to be what's happening in Cleveland right now.
All right, well, the Cavs aren't in action here on Wednesday night. I believe they're off until Friday, I think. Anything that you do like here on tonight's card? We've got a pretty healthy one. Looks like, about 9 games this evening?
I haven't handicapped them enough to make a final decision on it. You did mention how Boston was playing as of late. I happen to think Toronto is the team I'm looking to come out of the East. Boston has some problems on their own, and they've got a great coach, but they played really well early in the season, and now they're struggling with just a lot of the same things that Cleveland has. The offenses haven't been nearly as good. They are a great defensive team, but I think Toronto is the team coming out of the East that I'm looking to back. I saw a few days ago they were 40-1 to win the NBA championship. Do I think they're going to beat Golden State? No, but if I can get them at 40-1, I could do some nice hedging when the playoffs start. And I think they're a team that's been in there long enough where they're pretty built towards the playoffs, and they've put in their time. But on tonight's card, I haven't really given it a major look as of yet. So at this point, I'm not sure if there's anything I'm going to play at this point.
I guess last thing I'll ask you then is, you know, for me, I think this time of the year is really good for betting the NBA, because you don't have the All-Star break as a distraction. You don't have the holidays, anything like that. Just kind of status quo. You know, teams have worked in a few more off days here because that's something that the commissioner on the Players Association really wanted. Still some situational opportunities out there. What are you focused the most on here in late January, early February, in terms of handicapping the NBA? Is it the situational handicap? Is it, you know, your stronger numbers because you've got, you know, half a season worth of data on these teams? What are you relying on the most right now?
Well, the situational is always something you always have to take a look at, and that's one of the first things that I look at when I'm handicapping the NBA. But like you said a little bit earlier, the ebbs and flows of the season, where teams will play well at one point and they struggle later, people have a tendency to think they're going to play the same way all season long, and that's where you make your money. It's like the Cavaliers right now have not been very good, and so that's a team that we could play against. Boston's a team that has struggled as of late. I think we can make some money going against them. But you also have your teams like the New Jersey Nets and the Chicago Bulls are totally different than what they were earlier in the season. And if you could catch a team that is playing Chicago and New Jersey, Brooklyn, and they're going to overlook them, just like Oklahoma City did the other day. They just played the Cavaliers, and now they're playing the Nets. They had to struggle to win that game outright, so they had to do it in the last minute. So that's the time where you could take advantage of this. Just look at the teams that are starting to play a little bit. If you have the ability to watch the games, you definitely have an advantage, because sometimes the baskets won't go in, but you could tell the flow of the game is something that's conducive to winning, and how the teams are getting back on defense. So if you watch a lot of basketball, you're going to know before most people when a team is playing a lot better. And so as the season goes on, you have a lot of winning streaks and losing streaks, and you need to be able to pick out when these teams are playing poorly and take advantage of them, because really the lines don't really move that much if whether a team's winning or losing. It may be at a 7 level, and if they go up, if they're playing good ball, maybe at an 8 level, and maybe at a 6 level if they're not playing good ball. So it doesn't really move a whole lot, but you can make some good money on looking at the teams that are either going above or below what their season to date is and kind of riding those streaks.
Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. What's going on over at the website right now, Brian?
Been putting up a little bit more plays than I normally have. Been putting up a free play each and every day. So if you're into the free plays, I'm going to have those up at WagerTalk each and every day now. Been on a nice run. I think we've gone 5-2 this week. So those are always nice, and obviously they're free. And putting up, you know, handicapping the basketball and the hockey and the football right now. And like I said, I probably won't have much on the Super Bowl for the side, but I will be putting out my top prop plays. So there'll be a prop package up there, and we'll always make it at a reasonable price for everyone.
Well, and you can follow Brian on Twitter at BLeonardSports. Brian Leonard, WagerTalk.com. Appreciate your time here today. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Best of luck to everyone.
Good stuff there on today's show from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. We got one more guest here for this Wednesday edition of the show. That is Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hi, Adam. Doing all right, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Appreciate your time here. I know it's a very busy time of year for you with you know, those daily winter sports in full swing. Do get a little bit of a break with the NHL going on the All-Star break here on Friday, but let's go ahead and start with Super Bowl 52 and talk a little bit about this line, some of the movement that we've seen thus far, and really there hasn't been a whole lot. I mean, if you open 6, you're down to 5. If you open 5, you're pretty much sitting where you were. Not a whole lot going on here thus far.
Yeah, I think, you know, this has been pretty steady. I think, obviously, as you get closer to the game, you're going to get more and more movement. I mean, you know, the early returns, I guess, on this game is you're going to see, you know, and I hate these terms, but I mean, it's typical like pros versus Joes. You're going to see, I think, more of the public on the Patriots and maybe some of the wise guys on the Eagles here. But I mean, that doesn't mean it, and because this is such a highly bet game, it's hard to really lump people into just two groups, because I'm sure there's going to be your sharper bettors that also like the favorite and some public bettors that also like Philadelphia. So, but I mean, by and large, I think you're seeing that. I mean, I think some of the line maybe that Gronk is considered questionable, but I think he's going to play. This is 2 weeks between the game and this is the Super Bowl. I mean, he's going to play. You know, unless he would have like a broken leg or a broken back or something very extreme. Not that a concussion is not, but he's going to play in this game. So I don't know how much that's really affecting the line here. But you know, I mean, I think it's going to probably stay in a range. I don't see it moving more than a point or anything either way. So I kind of think these lines, when you have so much action and so much volume on the game, kind of usually stay where they are.
Well, and for our listeners that are just tuning in or those that are maybe just listening to this segment, apologies that I sound a little bit different. I couldn't connect to Blog Talk Radio the same way here this morning that I usually do, so I probably do sound a little bit different, maybe picking up a little bit more background noise, something like that, so I do apologize for that. But Wes, one of the things that's really intriguing to me about this line, I talked about this with Ed Feng yesterday, is that when you look at the Philadelphia lines for the divisional round and the conference championship round, you know, 3 or 2.5 against Atlanta, 3.5 opener against Minnesota, close 3 pretty much market wide. You know, they should be getting a full 3 for home field advantage in those two situations. So that line against Atlanta would imply 5.5 or 6 on a neutral. Minnesota, again, 6, 6.5 on a neutral. Well, here we're on a neutral against New England, and this number is 5. And I feel like, to me, as I'm kind of looking at that, I'm trying to decide if it's recency bias with how Foles played and how they blew out Minnesota, if it's the uncertainty of Gronkowski, if it's how Brady and the Patriots struggled a little bit with Jacksonville, or maybe this is a context clue that, you know, the market is sort of expecting Philadelphia to be the sharp side. So rather than go 6, they went ahead and put it in that dead zone around 5 and kind of told the market, hey, you guys decide where you want to put it.
Yeah, I think you're right there, because I think clearly that the Eagles have picked up more believers in the last 2 weeks. you know, how everybody kind of thought that season was done out in Los Angeles when they played the I think it was the Rams. It might have been the Chargers. It was one of the two teams where Carson Wentz got hurt. And, you know, they kind of thought that these guys were done. And they picked up a couple more believers, I think a lot more believers, really. And I think, you know, when the Eagles were really rolling at them and when they had Wentz, I mean, that guy was going to probably win the NFL MVP. The Eagles were playing great. I mean, they were really the top power-rated team, almost consensus, in the league. And I think when you take the quarterback away, you know, people kind of forgot about that this is a pretty good team, that this was more than just a hot quarterback, that this was a good defense that was getting turnovers. This was a defense that could move the ball both through the air and on the ground, and picking up Ajayi and Blunt, they obviously had. They were running the ball really well before they even had Jay Ajayi. So, you know, this team was a pretty complete team and almost the consensus top team in the league. So you have that. You add the Gronkowski potential injury, even though I think most people believe he's going to play. I certainly do. But you also look at the Patriots last week. Jaguars had their chance to put him away and really couldn't do it. And, you know, it almost felt like the Patriots, and you're not taking away from their victory, but it almost felt a little bit like they kind of escaped, where the Jaguars had their chances and it's like they couldn't convert. And you know that if you give the Patriots enough chances that they're going to burn you. And they drove down the field late and got a touchdown, and Jacksonville couldn't respond. So it was almost like the Patriots kind of, you know, not only won the game and do what they do, but it was a little bit, I think there's a perception maybe a little bit that they kind of escaped last week. So that's where I kind of think why this line is where it is. And I think it's a pretty good line in the fact that, I mean, you let guys determine where it's going to be. And I think, you know, that you can make a case for either side, clearly. I mean, you can always make a case for the Patriots. But, you know, I think the fact that people realize now that the Eagles are a pretty good team even without Carson Wentz.
One of the things that I'll be really interested in seeing is, you know, obviously here we don't have an NFL game unless you consider the Pro Bowl to be one, but you've got 2 weeks here in between, you know, the conference championship round and the Super Bowl. And one of the things that's been very telling in both college football and the NFL this year is that we've seen significant game day movements. I mean, we've seen, you know, the numbers grabbers go out there early in the week, and then as limits increase in the middle of the week, we see a little bit of movement, a little bit of action, a couple of adjustments to the lines. But this year, probably more so than any previous year, we saw avalanches of not just public money, but sharp money on game day as well. And it kind of makes me wonder, you know, when we start to see some involvement on this game. We saw the sixes go away, and that was, you know, I guess sharp guys out there grabbing the number, expecting this thing to go down a little bit like it has. But outside of that, you know, we're going to see 90 to 95% of the action on the side in total for this game probably come in Saturday and Sunday of not this upcoming weekend, but of game weekend. So I'm kind of curious to hear from you, Wes, on when you think we may actually, you know, see this number go to 4.5, maybe see it inch closer to 6. I don't know if it moves at all until maybe the middle of next week.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I think you're going to see probably some action this weekend, you know, being that there's, you know, just the Pro Bowl. I mean, I'm not personally betting the Pro Bowl, but some people will, and some people will do parlays, or some people will do their teasers, because, I mean, the only thing with a single game that you can really do a teaser with, I mean, I suppose you could do a cross-sport one, but, you know, you can really only kind of tease the side and the total in this game. I mean, you don't have enough, you know, two conference championships to do that, so you know, the only other football game that you can really try to tease this with is the Pro Bowl. And, I mean, the Pro Bowl is just not something I really bet very much. And, I mean, you know, you'll have potentially, if people want to tease it with the Senior Bowl, this Saturday. But I mean, that's so tough to bet those All-Star games, because those aren't really, you know, those are showcases for talent for the draft. And I mean, that's what people care about in that game. I mean, nobody remembers, you know, if the North or the South won the Senior Bowl 2 years ago. So, you know, in terms of teasers, that's going to really be your option. So, I mean, I think you'll see a little bit come in over the weekend, because some people will go ahead and do that with All-Star games, essentially. I mean, I don't think that those are the best bets to do this with. But in terms of, you know, straight bets and money line bets, I think the second week is where most of the action is clearly going to come.
Yeah, and the thing about the Senior Bowl this year, too, is Joe Everett actually asked me if I wanted him to talk about it on the show here on Monday, and I said, you know, not really, and he said, that's fine, because there are eight different quarterbacks on hand, and each quarterback's going to get a quarter. So if you're looking for any kind of flow, any kind of consistency, anything like that in the Senior Bowl, you're not going to find it. So definitely not something that you really want to invest in too much here. And Wes, last thing I'll ask you about the Super Bowl, and then we'll transition over to golf for a few minutes, is, you know, I know that you mentioned that you haven't really done too much of your prop homework yet, and I don't blame you. I mean, because of the high volume that you do across all the other sports, hard to find time to worry about something that's 10 days in advance here. But I did want to ask you this. You are a high volume guy, so you're used to processing a lot of data, reading the market very quickly, having a good feel for what's going on out there. Does that skill set help you when it comes to the vast amount of props that we have, or is there not really a correlation between the two?
It's really hard in terms of, you know, doing the high volume with the props, because, I mean, one of the thing with the props I try to do is maybe not focus. I mean, because you're trying to find as much of an edge as you can where there's going to be less movement. You know that the movement in some of these player props especially are going to be on the guys that are kind of the featured players, Tom Brady, Deion Lewis, Nick Foles, Alshon Jeffrey, you know, Gronk, those type of players where you're really going to see the movement, you know. So you're looking a little bit maybe at some of the lesser players. I mean, somebody like you know, not saying lesser players, but maybe less featured players. You know, maybe you're looking at a James White, or maybe you're looking at, not that Zach Ertz and James White are not prominent players for these teams, but you're kind of looking at those players. Maybe the guys that are like your second, third, fourth options. Instead of maybe looking at the top guys, and then you're looking at the, you know, and even with the defense, I mean, you know, I've done pretty well finding some places with defense, you know, with tackle props, you know, guys that are going to be in on lots of tackles and looking at stuff like that. And I think plus the prop market right now, you don't have all the books really with their stuff up yet. I mean, some are going to have a more limited prop action, you know, you're just your traditional stuff. And then some are going to have, you know, some of your bigger books are going to have, you know, 10 to 15 pages of props where they're going to have cross sport props with golf or with an NBA or with a big college basketball game where they're going to have these cross sport options. So you don't really know where you're going to have it. And I mean, it's such a big thing to kind of, dig into. And, you know, some are going to have, you know, where you might only have 3, 4, 5 books with props up on a certain thing. And then obviously every single book on the planet is going to have Tom Brady passing yards, Tom Brady touchdowns. So it's really, I mean, it's a total shopper's deal instead of, you know, just crunching numbers and doing your averages and seeing what you like. I mean, I think you totally got to shop around here with these things. So it's really a different market that I think people play because they don't play it week to week because the prop market isn't as big in regular season. So it's like a totally different market and a totally different handicap when you're doing it for the Super Bowl.
No, I think it's a great note that you made there about shopping around for the best lines and also the best juice. And, you know, again, you can also sort of get an idea based on the sports book you're looking at of, you know, if something is a little bit sharper in nature, you know, because you're going to see different juice at different books. And Bovada is going to have something very different than what Five Dimes is going to have, than what BetOnline is going to have, than what DSI will have, Pinnacle as well. You know, so you want to make sure that you're shopping around and crowdsourcing, you know, not just for the best lines, but also looking for some of those clues there on how some of the sharp players think that these games may play out. Some of the model guys, some of the daily fantasy guys. I mean, this is kind of their area of expertise. So, you know, lots of options out there when it comes to the props, and we'll touch a lot more on them next week once everybody's got their numbers posted, once all of our guests and myself have a chance to digest some of these numbers here and give you some good tips and some direction on where to go with those. But Wes, let's talk about the Farmers Insurance Open here as we transition over to the PGA Tour side of things. And, you know, this one at Torrey Pines, you've got two different courses on Thursday and Friday here. And this is the point that I want to start with, because there are a few events here early on in the season where you get this type of thing. The South Course, 7,700 yards. The North Course, a little bit more of your traditional 7,200-7,300 yard par 72. Looks like the weather forecast has changed a little bit. Early in the week, it was supposed to be windy on Thursday. Now it looks like the winds have died down considerably in the forecast. But, you know, in terms of looking at guys here that have to play the South Course first, is that a benefit for you? Because if you're trying to make the cut tomorrow, you're on the easier course.
Yeah, and I think one thing to advise, I mean, for those that listen that might do like the first round leader market. I mean, I always watch the market, but there's only a few times a year where I really get involved with first round leader. You obviously, if you're playing first round leader, want to play the guys on the North Course, which is the shorter, the easier course, the Tom Weisskopf design. They play the traditional South Course, the Reese Jones design over the weekend. So you really want to play the dudes on the North Course tomorrow, because those are the guys that are going to shoot your 65s and whatnot. And, I mean, the South Course, you know, good rounds are probably going to be 68, 67. Well, that's not going to be your first round leader, because somebody inevitably in a 156-player field is going to go low and shoot 6-7 under that first day on the North Course. And then, you know, you kind of usually see them come back to the field on Friday when they got to play that South Course. I mean, you seemingly see it every year. Somebody shoots 63 and then they shoot 73 and they go into the weekend a solid 4 under, but you kind of see them come back a little bit. And I mean, you haven't traditionally, you've seen some years where there's been some higher scores. I mean, you've seen 15, 16 under win this thing, but you've also seen if the wind picks up that guys are going to be in single digits winning this thing. I mean, 2 years ago, Brent Snedeker 6 under and just happened to get the good side of the course, and he was way back in the field, but just happened to get the good wind, and the guys that were the leaders that day, because there was a delay where they had to do a Monday finish, and those guys, the wind just killed those guys that were in those final several groups. So, you know, that's a little bit what you want to look at. It makes it an interesting handicap here. Now, a lot of times you got to look at the matchups. Very few books, sometimes they will, but very few books are going to make the mistake where they pair the North Course golfer with the South Course golfer. I mean, you know, your smarter books like Westgate, I mean, they're not going to do that. But some books might, and that's where you can try to kind of, you know, look over it with a fine-tooth comb and see if you can exploit something that way.
Yeah, that's information you can find on PGATour.com to see which guys are playing which course on Thursday and then the same thing on Friday. And then, you know, you mentioned 2 years ago when Brant Snedeker won, and it wasn't even just the wind. I mean, it was a very rainy day as well. If I remember correctly, some trees fell on the property. I mean, it was a big-time storm that rolled through. A lot of guys are putting up those final round 80s, and, you know, I mean, it was just one of those outlier types of tournaments. So when you go back through your course form data, which I know is a big part of your golf handicap, did you just cross out the 2016 tournament, or did you, you know, find ways to incorporate it, but keep in mind the way it finished up?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of the latter. I mean, you certainly don't want to ignore it, but I mean, I think that there's, because this is the regular course rotation, you know, you get, I think, a pretty good sense of guys, you know, and you look at different type of guys. I mean, some guys are West Coast specialists, some guys are the Ben Grass Poa Nua guys, you know, green guys, and also some guys are good with coastal golf. So you kind of look at the correlation, and then you look at maybe results at some other courses that may correlate with Torrey Pines, and looking at some of the design things here. I mean, I found some different correlations in terms of with the course up at Canada, Glen Abbey, you know, some guys that have played well there, play well here. Some of the guys at the Heritage and Hilton Head also play well here. So, I mean, you're kind of just looking at different things than you're obviously looking at your recency form as well, in addition to the course form. So, you know, I think you could still definitely incorporate that data.
John Rahm, the favorite here this week. I'm going off of five dimes lines. He's +670. Ricky Fowler, +1130. Justin Rose, +1400. Hideki Matsuyama, who's a guy you want to keep in mind next week at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, although his price will certainly reflect that. He's +1650. Jason Day rounds out the top five, about 20-1. But the guy who's on the six line here, he's got some people kind of all hot and bothered out there on Twitter with how he was swinging it in the Pro-Am. That's Tiger Woods. +2050 here as he makes his PGA Tour return, at least in terms of a points event. Played the Hero World Challenge, about a month and a half or so ago. Wes, do you have any interest in Tiger Woods this week? I mean, obviously the futures price is not, a true indication of what his chances are of winning this tournament. But are you looking to fade him from a matchup standpoint, or are you just going to kind of leave him alone?
I may end up leaving him alone. What I kind of found is that I'm looking at the two guys that are playing with him, because obviously that's the featured group with him coming back, and the guys that drew him in the first two rounds were Patrick Reed and Charlie Hoff. And there's some people that like Hoffman this week, but those are guys I'm kind of perhaps looking to go against a little bit in matchups, because, I mean, playing with Tiger, there's a lot of eyeballs on you, and, I mean, you know that the crowd and the people are going to be with him. He's a guy that's won at this course 8 times. I mean, the Buick, and also won a U.S. Open, won a major here in that playoff with Rocco Mediate. So you're looking at a guy that this is the perfect place for Tiger to return. I mean, you want to return where you have success. I mean, is 20-1 fair odds? No, he probably should be. If you're including the Tiger Torrey Pines discount, he probably a fair odds would be around 40-1. But guys aren't going to put him that because they're going to get hammered at that line. So I think a lot of the books put him between 20 and 25, which was probably as reasonable as you were going to get here. But, I mean, people are going to bet Tiger at whatever price. And, you know, the fact that he's out there for the Pro-Am, he birdied the first hole, and Twitter seemingly went nuts like he's back. But, you know, I think to make the cut, if he's anything less than, you know, if he's won between 175 and 200 are kind of the prices I've seen. And, I mean, I think it's reasonable that he's going to make the cut. Last time we saw him at the World Challenge, he wasn't too bad. And, I mean, he wasn't in contention, but – you know, he wasn't embarrassing himself. He looked like he was swinging a lot better. Seemed, at least on the surface, that he was more healthy. So, you know, I don't think it's a great bet in the futures market, but I think maybe you could find some props, find maybe top 20, or you could find him to make the cut. I don't think those are the worst bets in the world.
All right, now as I mentioned here, the South Course, which is going to be played 54 of the 72 holes. You're only going to play one round on that North Course, and then everything else is going to be on the South Course, 7,700 yards. So it doesn't surprise me that on the list of guys that you've tipped over on your Twitter handle at Wes Reynolds, or on your Twitter timeline at Wes Reynolds, the number one, you've got several dudes that can really hit it a long way.
Yeah, and I mean, I looked at a couple guys that I like this week, Oliver Snyderton's, who I think is one of those young players that's kind of due to win at some point. Played very well at Wylie, ended up finishing seventh, but looking at kind of going a little bit deeper in the numbers, he had 24 birdies at the Sony Open and an eagle. And I mean, the birdies mark placed him at the top of the field. Obviously, not winning, he made some mistakes, which young guys are going to do. But he's a guy that's had some pretty solid finishes. He plays well at coastal courses. Was second last year at Sea Island in Georgia at the RSM. Was ninth here last year. Was third at Harbor Town. So he's a guy that kind of likes that coastal golf, and another guy that I think is a shorter price, but not one of the favorites that I really liked, was Mark Leishman, who's been twice a bridesmaid here at Torrey Pines over the years. Plays great in coastal golf. There's a lot of links with Tiger, if you want to look at where Tiger has really played well. I mean, his kind of course specialties, Augusta, St. Andrews, Firestone, Muirfield, and also Bay Hill. Those are courses that Mark Leishman has played pretty well at over his career. So, looking at that, Leishman is a guy like Johnny Vegas, who I think is playing the best golf of his career right now, is a guy I also like. Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, if you want to play the hometown angle, played at San Diego State. Obviously, won the Tour Championship last year, so he's a guy that comes in with some class. You're getting him at a good price at 60-1. So those are guys I look at. And then if you like form, Shane Lowry was in contention here last year. 50-1, one of the few Euros that are playing this week instead of in Dubai. So, there's some value, I think, on this board if you're not interested in taking John Rahm, who clearly probably is the clear favorite here. If you're not interested in taking him or Matsuyama or Rose or some of the shorter priced guys, you can find some guys that I think are going to be there on Sunday.
And three of those guys in my daily fantasy article over at bangthebook.com, looking at the local guy, Finau, and also Vegas. So those are the three guys that I've got in that daily fantasy piece. And again, I mean, you look at all of these different things. You look at guys that can really swing it on a long course like this, the local angle, you figure he's got some more familiarity with this course, with the conditions. And then also, a guy like Leishman that, as you mentioned, plays well on a lot of the same courses that Tiger plays well on. So I think those are all really, really good angles there for you to look at when it comes to golf. And Wes, before we sign off here, I mentioned looking at Hideki Matsuyama next week at the Waste Management, and he'll probably be 10-1, 12-1, something like that, on the high end because he's played so well in that event before. That is my favorite golf event of the year. I know everybody loves the majors. I certainly like watching Augusta, and I enjoy watching the British Open. But the party-esque atmosphere at the Waste Management is it's phenomenal television.
It is exciting, and I mean, the crowd really gets into it, and you usually are going to have a good field, and Matsuyama is going to be there, Ricky Fowler. I'm sure both Steve and Thomas are going to play since they have taken the last 2 weeks off. Phil Mickelson, of course, being from the Scottsdale area, is always a crowd favorite. So, you're starting to get in the swing now where we're really getting good full field in these events, and you're right in the middle of the West Coast swing. You have the Middle East swing over in Europe. So you're starting to see some really quality balanced fields, I think, in these events, and that makes it a lot more fun.
Well, for those interested in tonight's college basketball, NBA, NHL, and anything else that Wes puts up, you can follow him on Twitter at Wes Reynolds, the number one. Wes, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, you bet, Adam. Have a good one.
Good stuff there with Wes Reynolds. Again, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. I know we're talking about a lot of the same things here with Super Bowl 52, but I'm getting opinions from the different guests here about the line, about where the line should be. Next week is when we'll really hammer in on that prop betting market. those are going to be some great shows for you. So I know that maybe things are a little bit redundant, and I'm certainly getting that feeling myself here in terms of talking about a lot of the same things with regards to the Super Bowl 52 line, but I can't wait to dive into the props. I'll have some article content up here very soon at bangthebook.com. I want to make sure that, you know, all of our listeners, depending on what sports book they use or if they use a local, you know, have access to those numbers where I'm going to post, you know, what the yardage lines are and, of course, what the juice is as well. So, you know, we'll take a sample size of different sports books out there and apply, you know, some spin on those and some of our context as well. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Brad Powers will join us from bradpowerssports.com. Well, I'm sure we'll find a way to work college football in, but we'll definitely talk Super Bowl 52, probably some college hoops with him as well. And then Rolf Michaels from wagertalk.com will join us. We'll chat with him about, again, the Super Bowl 52 line, and then also discuss what we have going on in the world of college basketball. Friday, we may have a pretty long show for you. I've reached out to Lockie Lockerson, who I'm hoping to talk some college basketball futures with, also with Whale Capper, hoping to chat a little bit of Super Bowl 52 and some NBA there with him. I will also have Brent from DSI Sportsbook, and I'm hoping to get Whale Capper for some props next week, also Lockie Lockerson for some props as well. So we're going to try and really load up here over these final seven shows before we get to Super Bowl 52. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.